Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Pets with Belly too, and we're putting it all in a podcast, then we'll send it up into the sky. We're calling it Pox and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Well, welcome everybody to Parks and Recollection. This is a great episode. I mean, well, first of all, Alan Yang's here, as he is every week.
What's up, Rolo? How you doing?
So I was watching Vikings last night. You know, I'm nothing if not current.
Love that intro. Love coming in hot to the pod. I was watching Vikings. Let's go. What do you got, Rob?
Well, here's what I got. The co-lead's name is Rolo. That's what I got.
Oh, right.
I mean, so I'm wondering, was Amy Poehler the first person to recognize my Viking lineage when she named me Rolo?
What if we found out she was a secret Vikings fan? What if we found out she was an EP on Vikings? Just like she's naming those characters.
I think somebody should be Rolo. So that was my, anyway. But listen, enough about the Vikings. Take us away. Tell me what we have in store here.
We not only have a great episode to talk about, we have a great guest, two guests tonight.
I know.
I don't know why I said tonight. It's daytime, and you might be listening to the pod at any time of day.
No, they listen to it at night. This is definitely sun goes down.
After dark podcast.
Yes.
We're joined by legendary casting director Allison Jones, and of course, Ben Harris, who works very closely with her, the casting team behind some of the greatest shows you've ever seen. We'll talk to them about all their amazing shows, but mostly about this one, because that's what the show's about.
Yay! We're a new podcast. Let's not forget, we're the new kids on the block. So reviews are good. They're very important to us. So please, if you're enjoying this, take a sec, give us a 5-star review, and tell all of your friends. And also, don't forget to call and ask us a question for a town hall. You could be in the town hall, or you could leave your town hall in the review. If you really want me to see it, put it in the review.
Yeah. Episode 4 of Season 1, Boys Club, first aired April 30th, 2009, written by me, Alan Yang, and directed by Michael McCullers. So yeah, this was a very early episode, but it was fun to watch.
Michael McCullers has some sort of affiliation with Wayne's World and Mike Myers, am I right about this?
He worked with Mike Myers, and I think he wrote some of those movies. And he also directed Baby Mama with Amy Poehler.
That's TMFA. Right.
Let me get through this episode synopsis, and we can talk to Allison and Ben. How about that, Rob?
Yeah, sorry. I was so excited about Michael McCullers.
All right, so here's the synopsis. Leslie and Ann try to integrate themselves into the city planners' boys' club by drinking in the courtyard in an effort to network. As the group runs out of beers, Leslie grabs wine from an illegal gift basket and gets into trouble as she tries to accept responsibility for her supposed mistake. By making a public apology, Leslie draws attention to the park's social media site, but she doesn't know that April has posted a video of herself underage drinking. A disciplinary hearing is called to see what should be done with Leslie. Leslie apologizes to the board and defends April, accepting responsibility for the video herself. As the questions from the board continue, Ron angrily defends Leslie. The consequences end up being light, and Leslie is accepted into the boys' club. In a B story, Andy cleans Anne's house while she's at work. Later, Anne arrives home and is pleased with Andy's housework, with Andy telling the documentary crew he expects to get, quote, gently laid later. And that's the synopsis. So, yeah, I like, hey, briefer synopsis today. I like it.
It's funny, the ethics violation in this episode, I mean, it's always the comedy of the mundane with Parks and Rec and the small, you know, the comedy isn't how small it is. But the this ethics violation is very, very almost quaint considering to where the story stakes ended up going.
It's so small. I mean, and in the beginning, we wanted it to be small, right? I think the overall directive from the showrunners, from Mike and Greg, was, yeah, it could be funny if she's really excited and really worked up and really nervous and scared about smaller things. So the smaller, the better in some ways. So this one is like a gift basket of wine and cheese. And then meanwhile, cut to season three. She's like, we got to save the town, right? And then by the end, it's like, I'm president, essentially. But in season one, season one, it's like, let's talk about this gift basket. And that was, you know, that's where the comedy kind of changed, right? She is still a little bit delusional in this one. It's kind of the first season version of Leslie. But you start to see, you do see the seeds of kind of relationships building, right? So you see, you know, Leslie and Ron, you know, you see that building and Ron sticking his neck out for Leslie, even though he denies it to camera. And then you see Andy sort of developing. He's not just a leech in this one. He's not just a schlub. He's trying to clean himself up for Anne. So you see the hints of the show developing. And as we move into five and six especially for this season, you'll see the seeds of season two. But I was happy with how this episode turned out. You know, I think when we looked back on this season and looked at the episodes, it was like, oh, you know, you see it sort of pace up a little bit. It's a little bit more energetic and a little happier. So I feel like we got there and I was glad to get an episode this season for sure.
And I'll tell you what is interesting, and there's, we've talked a lot about it, and it's legendary in the comedy world and the TV development world. The adjusting of Leslie's character. And this is really one where you see she screws up and is sort of scrambling to rise above it and to succeed. And you guys pivot off of that very quickly after these few episodes. But this is a perfect episode to look at in terms of you don't know what you don't know. And you didn't really realize that Amy Poehler is better when she's good at her job.
Yeah, yeah. She is a high status person who should play a high status character. She's always scoring and in person, and so she should score in the show. And I think we learned that pretty quickly, and I think that ended up helping the show. She's ambitious for the team and for the good of Pawnee and not for herself, which is also really, really helpful, you know? But yeah, let's talk to Allison and Ben. They're here. Let's not waste their precious time. They've got casting to do. They've got a million shows. They have Netflix shows, HBO shows, so much stuff to do. How are you guys? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan.
We're good. Thanks for having us.
Well, so for people who don't understand the way the business works, casting directors are the keys to the kingdom. They really are the... I don't know if you're going to like... I'll be curious to know what you think about this, my assessment of what you guys do. But what you guys do is extraordinary because they are tasked with casting, putting finding the actors for any particular project. You guys will remember the great Janet Hershenson. She's totally responsible for my career. And you know, most actors who make it can look back at a casting director and say, but for them, I don't know where I am. And you guys have discovered, emboldened, chosen, however you want to look at it, some of the great actors of our time, not just in comedy, but it seems like for me, more in comedy than not. Is that fair?
Yes, definitely more in comedy than not.
Very quickly, just so people have some background in Allison so she doesn't have to brag. Besides Parks and Rec, also The Office, also Veep, also seemingly every Judd Apatow movie. We've got 4-Year-Old Virgin, you know, Knocked Up, Borat, you know, Talladega Nights, like every movie, Bridesmaids. So this is every movie, you know, and the pilot for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, it just keeps going. So almost every comedy you enjoyed the last 20 years or whatever, Allison has a hand in it. Master None, by the way, a show we worked on together. So, you know, it's just phenomenal to have you here. It's phenomenal to have you guys both.
Thank you so much.
What do you guys look for, you know, when you're just, is it just a taste thing? Is it just who catches your eye? Like, how do they, is it all just intangible? Is there any tricks to the trade? If I were to become a casting person, I'm trying to get into the business tomorrow. What do I do? What do I look for in people?
I don't think you can teach it. I mean, I started doing comedy. It was, my first show was Benson and Family Ties, which were half hour comedy. And in those days, you got pigeonholed like crazy. So actors did too, right, Rob? You could only do one thing. Yeah. God forbid you could ever jump to a feature film.
That's right. So
that's what I owe to Judd Apatow for hiring me for 40-year-old virgin. But anyway, thank you, Judd. So I learned comedy actors, blah, 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 blah. I think, and I learned stand-ups. I would go to stand-up comedy store every single night. And for some reason, I started plugging stand-ups into all these roles. And many good ones I've had to fire, and I won't say who those are, but many now very famous stand-ups who I had to fire. But I don't know. For me, it's who makes me laugh. And so I guess it's the taste of the time and of the...
Yeah, I think it's knowing the market, right? Knowing who's out there and who basically just who's the... if because we work so specifically or most of the time in comedy, who's the funniest guy or gal out there, right? Yeah. And being able to know that this person is maybe they aren't super polished in their auditioning, right? Lots of times there's people that crack us up and we've seen them do a sketch here or catch a set somewhere, and it is a little bit intangible in that you just go, this guy or gal makes me laugh. And then giving them a shot and bringing them in, and half the time they are terrible at auditioning, right?
Terrible.
And it takes bringing them back over and over, and hopefully you have a producer that, maybe will catch a set or, watch a demo link or something, right? Where they get to and can see the bigger picture and give them a shot, like to your credit, where you're going, send me your 12 funniest people. Many creators and showrunners, lots of them aren't as open-minded, right? Or don't have as much faith or don't want to write to someone's voice as much as you and Mike and all those guys do. So,
yeah. I also love that you guys put a priority on a couple of things. One is someone who's unique, someone who you haven't seen before. I mean, we talk about that with the writing and direction of a show, right? Is we want to put something out there that's not out there, right? What's not in the marketplace? What's something they can't find on their million streaming services? What's something new and fresh and original? Even if, like you're saying, this person might not be super polished or an super experienced actor, like that can be exciting. And the second thing, I think, I don't want to speak for you, but it feels like when you're making a show, you want the right balance, right? It's like making a stew. It's like building this recipe, and like you want this balance of energies, and it really matters. Like, okay, if your lead's polar, then who do you want as a yang to her yin, right? Oh, you have Offerman for that. Like this balance of energies, and then you build out the cast. That's so exciting, man. I really, you're right. It ultimately is judgment and taste. Like when we call you guys, it's like, yeah, what do you think? Like between these, it comes down to 2-3 people for a part. Man, you can agonize. I've agonized in the past. It's really tricky, man.
Yeah.
It's really tricky.
Mike is good about that, too. He's extremely thoughtful on who he chooses.
Yes, I can make a chart. Make a chart and figure out, like...
No, nothing like Greg Daniels, who'll make a graph. He made a graph when we were casting the pilot of The Office. A graph.
What does a casting graph look like? I'm fascinated. I love this.
He had, qualities, like, chief qualities on one side. He probably had authenticity to the... Greg would have to... probably contradict me, but he had qualities on one side and I think probably accuracy to the English cast on another side, and somehow graphed it. And we were like, you got to be kidding me. Nothing to do with graph on casting.
That's amazing.
But he had a casting graph, yeah.
Well, it worked for that show. It went 150 episodes, so it worked for that show. It was remarkable casting on that show. But forget about that show. This is this show.
Yeah, sorry.
Speaking about this episode and the first season in general, I don't know if we've talked about this before, but we actually wrote 7 episodes this first year, and as you guys know, there were only 6 episodes that aired, and so... we wrote 7 just to have the luxury of literally throwing one out. I mean, that's a limited episode one did for us.
So I didn't know that.
We all, a bunch of the writers got to write drafts. I felt very fortunate to get an episode that first year because I was a staff writer. I was a first year writer. And the episode we ended up throwing out was one that Mike wrote himself, which was very wild. I mean, it wasn't due to the quality of the script. It was just how the pieces fit together. But he wrote an episode, I believe, called Spraying for Rats, which the premise was they spray the pit for vermin, essentially, and they end up accidentally spraying an unhoused person who's living there. And there was a whole other storyline where they had to add someone else to the pit committee, and they met with an amazing stand-up comedian, Cat Williams, I believe, to play a part in the show, and he was so funny. But we just ended up not doing that episode, so that storyline just kind of died on the vine.
Where was the pit? We always wanted to know.
The pit was in like Studio City area, right?
Oh.
Yeah. Greg, do you remember the cross streets? It was like Hazeltine and Collins, I believe.
Wow.
It was on Collins, yeah. It was in Sherman Oaks. Yeah.
Oh, Sherman Oaks, okay, yeah. Truly an eyesore, really a life imitating art, because you drove by like, this is horrible. This is like horrendous, and we'd have to go there all the time to shoot. I almost called you Chris Traeger. Rob. I was like, hey, Chris Traeger, did you ever go to the pit? You did, right? Yeah, all the time, right?
The pit was filled in by the time I got there. It was the lot, and the first time I went there was Freddie Spaghetti.
That's your second episode.
It's my second episode, and I remember it like it was yesterday. But yeah, it had grass. It was very pretty by the time I got there. It was still so hot always there.
Yeah, I remember writing this episode. It was obviously over 12 years ago, something like that now. But I was kind of sweating bullets because, you know, this was my first episode for the show and first real like scripted episodes for television. I'd written for South Park, but they don't let you write episodes there. Trey Parker and Matt Stone write all the episodes. So I wrote this episode in a public library because I had nowhere to write it. So I went to the library and just sat at this, like, you know, a public area and remember writing it and trying to come up with like the cold open and stuff. And yeah, pretty nerve wracking. But the great thing was on this show that Mike and Greg were super, super encouraging. And also, by the way, by this time we had rewritten the first two episodes. We rewrote the pilot and the second episode. Second episode we rewrote for like 13 weeks. The third episode we rewrote for like 8 weeks. And then by the time it came to this episode, which was the fourth episode, we ran out of time and had to shoot in like 3 days or something. So we were like, oh, let's look at it. And like, we're out of time. We got to shoot it on Monday. So we'll table read it quickly and then see what happens. So, but yeah, I feel like you can see that the seeds of upcoming stuff, like Pratt is kind of fun. And Pratt, by the way, does more stuff in this episode, more similar to his audition than he did as the initial conception of the character. Mm-hmm. This is what his power steered us towards, right?
Completely did. Yeah.
And were you guys aware of Pratt before? Or had he read for you guys before? So he was in the world. He was like, he was a funny guy that you guys knew, right?
What you forget is he was kind of a teen idol in a weird way because he had been on Everwood. Yeah. You know, people loved him on Everwood. Yeah.
He had a kooky character on the OC, right?
He was definitely doing the thing. And, you know, I've said this on another podcast, but I remember when I came onto the show and, you know, this group of insane, wonderfully talented, really, really different types of actors. I told my agents and managers that there's one though on this that I think might be, if he ever gets a shot, the biggest movie star in the world. And my agents to this day say, you called it. And that was Pratt.
Wow.
Yeah. Because he had every club in the bag. And I remember when he got, when I think it was Moneyball, he was auditioning for Moneyball. I was like, yeah, if you need to make the decision whether you want to be fat, funny guy, third guy through the door, or whether you want it all, because you can have it. And the rest is history.
Yeah, he mostly didn't get comedy stuff we brought him in on, right, Ben?
Yeah, we brought him in on Paul.
He came in late to his Paul audition. Yeah. And, yeah.
Well, we should talk about Parks a little bit because this is a Parks podcast, but I wanted to ask you guys specifically, this episode, Boys Club, first of all, you know, again, very early in the run, it originally was called Ethics Violation. I remember because I had to write the draft, so I remember the script, and there were a couple fun things about it that you guys were involved in. I mean, you know, one of them is that Aubrey Plaza's character, April Ludgate, is pretty prominent in this episode. This was one of her first kind of prominent episodes. And it was so early on in the run that her name in the script was just Aubrey. I remember writing it, and she didn't have a character name yet. So she was just called Aubrey, and I think Donna was named Paris. Mark was named Josh at some point. Anyway,
yes,
you guys
were
instrumental, I believe, in casting Aubrey Plaza. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. What had she done? UCB stuff and some videos and
UCB in New York. And Ben, who sent her to us? Was it? That's a great question. Must have been Three Arts or something. It must have been Dave Bickey or somebody. One of these great comedy
Greg
managers.
Walter or somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was at the time. It took about 10 years for the comedy world to figure out that improv and sketch people were actually the funniest people you could possibly hire, and that they could improv and be funnier than, with all due respect, Alan, most things comedy people could write. When I started, it was verboten, Rob, to say any word that wasn't written. Mm. You couldn't come in for an audition. If you went off that line, you didn't know what you were doing. So you could not improvise. I recall the first person who improvised an audition was the great Amy Sedaris. And it was like,
wow.
But it was funnier. And Chris Thompson at the time said, I like that girl. She's funny. She got the part. Anyway, so Aubrey came in. It was like no brainer. We were casting Scott Pilgrim at the time. And we had, so we sent her first to Mike Shore, I believe, to say, this is somebody interesting, Mike, because Mike was willing to meet people and write them parts. So we sent her to Mike Shore first, and he instantly said, okay, we got to write a part for this woman because she's obviously so interesting. And then I think in the same week, she got Scott Pilgrim and Funny People because she was so special. So that's the story of Aubrey Plaza. And she's not different now than she was that first day.
It's always a bit. That's true. Aubrey texted me today, and it was it's a bit, right? It's like it's always a bit, right? It's always like I'm going to ruin your life, all that kind of stuff, like that kind of stuff. But but you know, Allison brings up a great point, which is, you know, just kind of implying and sort of truthfully that this is how influential and impactful she can be. When you're creating a show and you're writing a show, yes, you have characters in mind and you want to build this world, but oftentimes, especially in comedy, you want to write towards the actor. And so you just want to meet interesting, funny people you haven't seen before. And so what we did on Master None, we just said, Allison, send us your dozen favorite people, like literally that general. And we just want to sit down and meet with them. And the very first person we met with was Lena Waithe. And she was mostly a writer. She had done a little performing, and she came in wearing a Chicago Bulls jersey and some Timberlands. And me and Aziz just chatted with her. And after meeting all these people and writing scripts and all this stuff, we're like, we just feel like there's something interesting about Lena. We're just going to write a character for her. And as the show, you know, progressed, we just wrote more and more for her because there was something undeniable about her. So that's how cool Allison's job and Ben's job is when they're able to send people to showrunners and kind of get their foot in the door, you know?
And I had seen her just on a YouTube thing. So it was...
That's phenomenal.
Which
that's
has also changed the... Certainly has changed the casting business. At least YouTube. In comedy, there's a little bit more to sort through. It used to be we'd have to go to the comedy store every night to see everybody. But anyway, I think Lena has been working since then, Alan. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to her. I'm not sure. She's not busy enough.
I have no idea. Yeah,
she's not busy enough. But yeah, it's really fun. And talk to us a little bit about, you know, some of the other actors in the show. I mean, I know some of them were known. I know, but some of the other actors, you know, how'd they come about? I know, like Offerman, I think Shore had his mindset on for some time, but. Was it just kind of auditions? A lot of them, you know.
Yeah.
And Offerman wasn't. He wasn't set on Offerman. We read a lot of people.
Oh, right. That's right. Right. Sorry. I misremember because he had his name on a post-it. But we did read a lot of people. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He read for Josh first and wasn't really right for that. And then they came over with the Ron character. And that was obviously for Nick. But Ben, you remember the Chris Pratt situation.
That was, I think, still one of the best auditions I've ever seen.
Very much so. Yeah. It was like nothing we'd ever seen, right?
He just improvised. He was playing one of the Grand Theft Autos, I think was his entire audition. And he was saying all sorts of inappropriate things that we probably shouldn't say on here. But sticks out in my mind as one of the best auditions I've ever seen.
Yeah. Rashida was attached to the show. She was the one who was pretty much a slam dunk. Yeah.
And Aziz came in a bit early, too. Aziz was a bit early in the process.
Yeah.
But Chris Pratt and turning him from a guest star into a regular cast that's partly due to the auditioning, right? I mean, he'd been on Everwood and the OC, but man, those tapes, I remember we were fortunate enough as the writers to watch some of these tapes just to weigh in. And I still remember the Pratt. I mean, he did it in Mike's office.
Yeah, it was in Mike's office.
Yes, it was. That's when he did the improv, which was crazy funny.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Jim, question for you. How is your social battery right now? Are you drained? Are you bursting with energy? How you doing?
My battery, Greg, thank you for asking, is pretty full. It's because I have learned over the years, sometimes you got to get help. And I am not afraid to do that.
It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. So it's important to figure out what the right amount of socializing for you is and the best way to recharge. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Well, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Yeah, so if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It can be a lifesaver. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, because, you know, sometimes the first match isn't always the best match.
So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/parks today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/parks. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Plus, you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, which is awesome, and more than 60 add-ons every week.
The last Factor meal I had was a pork chop. Oh, here's the thing about pork chops. I want it tender. I want it juicy. And that is what Factor gave me. Honest to God, it was amazing. And all I had to do was peel off the top and pop it in the oven a couple of minutes. And the smell hits you before you ever taste it. It fills the entire kitchen. And then you peel and you eat. And it is so good.
Head to factormeals.com/parksandrex50 and use code parksandrex50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code parksandrex50 at factormeals.com/parksandrex50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Certainly, you guys definitely helped out with the Jerry and Donna stuff. Weren't there some interesting Donna and Jerry auditions that were not, like, were different from the conceptions that ended up in the show?
Completely. Well, and Mike was also, you guys were all open to, let's just get some interesting people. Because the first time that ever happened was in The Office, where people in the background, Phyllis, you know, our wonderful Phyllis,
yes,
turned out to be series regulars. That was a whole new thing for us. So in Park and Rec, then they said, let's maybe have a couple people who might stick around every episode. And, you know, actors were like, I don't know if we want to do this. It's only one line in the pilot. And then we had to sell it. Like, well, you might stick around, like in The Office, in the what? You know, so it was, you know, agents would fight back at it. But anyway, it was another thing where you guys just said, bring in some funny people who seem like they'd work at a parks and recreation department. And we did. And those two are almost my favorite in the whole show. So,
I mean, it's really they, like Donna really comes into her own. In this episode, her hair is so different. I'm like, Donna, Retta, what are you doing? Like, you look so different. Is it true that Ellie Kemper auditioned for Donna at one point? That would have been different.
She did, in fact. Right, Ben?
Yeah.
A slightly different character with Ellie Kemper in the role, but
slightly different.
Yeah, but man, they ended up killing it. The guys you, and I remember Jim auditioned for Ron Swanson, right?
Is that yeah,
right?
Jim O'Hare. Yeah, Octavia Spencer auditioned for Donna.
Jesus,
what? That's right, and I believe she got really far, because I remember watching Octavia Spencer's audition, and we were like, this is sensational. Like, we love both of them, and we're like, you know, Retta's pretty comedy forward and really funny. We're going to cast Retta, but again, I didn't make that decision, but I believe Octavia Spencer was still doing some comedy stuff. She did a pilot for Dan Gore or something, I think. Is that something the year after or something? But anyway.
She was in The Groundlings, yeah.
Loaded stocked pool for the Donna auditions. That's a difficult decision to make.
And I think, like, Ike Barinholtz and for Andy and who
this
else?
Is fascinating.
Mark Duplass, I remember read.
Yeah, Duplass was in the mix. Nick Thune was in the mix for Andy, I think. Yeah, Bobby Lee.
Yeah, Bobby Lee read for Ron or something. Yeah. I mean
this is my favorite stuff.
Joel McHale.
And didn't Adam Scott read at some point and we ended
very
up casting him later in the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rob Corddry, Will Sasso, all these guys. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And then I have here Aubrey for Aubrey. Yeah.
Aubrey for Aubrey. Yeah, we named the character Aubrey.
It was actually Diana McGonigal. Her manager was an agent at CAA at the time, and she was great. and she sent us Aubrey and quite a few other people. But.
And some of those guys were Ron. Some of them were for the Josh character that would end up being Mark, and some of them for Andy. But yeah, I mean, and then we were also, it was kind of a mixing and matching too.
Yeah.
So Alan, how were you in seeing all these tapes as a baby staff writer?
I had some trust. No, they were actually open to some of this stuff. And also, I want to credit them for bringing some of us into the process, not just with casting, but with being on set, being in post, helping to edit, working with all of these different facets of production. So I felt like when I was, you know, 30 or whatever, getting on, you know, to my next step and doing our own show, me and Aziz, man, I felt way more equipped than someone who had just been in a writer's room.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how, the other thing that's changed so much is you would always get actors who were like not interested in television.
Always.
And always. And now you know what it is? It's not interested in network television.
Yes, exactly.
You notice that?
TV ultimately became the new film because I was at the bottom of the barrel casting sitcom. It was like NITV and definitely NI sitcom. And then now it's no network TV, but now it's the best stuff. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Like, I don't want to do Fleabag. I don't want to do I May Destroy You. Are you kidding? It's the best shit out there. It's like
it's
incredible.
It's been a wonderful,
right?
wonderful transformation into the respect. And you're not called a TV actor anymore or a film actor, right, Rob? You would call it TV actor, film actor.
No. We got Meryl Streep doing TV. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
The thing about when you meet somebody who's different and special, you really never forget them. But with that said, who do you think is the most unforgettable of that came across you guys early on?
Oh, gosh. I've been doing it a lot longer than Ben has. So I would say in the very early, for example, Family Ties Benson years. Mm. I know.
Wow.
Family Ties Golden Girls.
I love that. That's phenomenal.
I mean, I was the casting assistant on Golden Girls, and I would say...
So Rue McClanahan, so it's Rue McClanahan. B. Arthur was probably, like, already involved, because she's a huge TV star, right?
No, it was B. Arthur versus Elaine Stritch.
Get out.
Wow, wait, I'm so in. This is blowing my mind.
This is another podcast. Yeah.
There's an alternate universe. This is a multiverse where Elaine Stritch... plays the Dorothy part.
She tested at the network in yellow, tip to toe. She was yellow tip to toe. B. Arthur didn't have to test, but B got the part because of Susan Harris's connection to Maude. But no. It was not, she was not involved from the get-go. And Rue and Betty both had to test as well. But Estelle Getty was pre-reading at the time. And she pre-read for a part. She pre-read for a part in Family Ties. And then like the next week, we pre-read her for Golden Girls. And my boss at the time, Judith Wiener, called up Tony Thomas and said, I think we have the person. Can we bring her into the network? And we tested her and she got it right away.
Oh.
But no, B was not tied into it right away. Greg Levine has an interesting story, too, about how he got into Park and Rec. Right, Greg?
You know, Allison put the cast together, but Allison is personally responsible for getting me my job on Parks and Rec. Because I was her and Ben's assistant at the time during the writer strike. And then after a few months, she was going to do the Office spinoff. And I'm like, I need to be a writer's assistant on this thing. And unbeknownst to me, well, the Office spinoff becomes Parks. But once a week, pretty much, she called Mike and Greg and says, you need to hire my assistant to be a writer's assistant.
That's wonderful. It's Aubrey Plaza, Lena Waithe, Greg Levine, making the stars, making the stars. Allison, just out there.
Were you involved in the conversations about bringing Adam on to the show?
No, I was not. We had he came in to read for the pilot, and I had left after six episodes, which is now seven, as you say. Six episodes, and no, I think they had always liked Adam. He almost got the role of Jim on The Office, but there were some dissenters. I was not one of them, but he almost got the role of Jim on The Office, and everybody remembered him from how cool he was for Jim. And Adam Scott paid his dues too, man. I mean, he, Jesus, and he was so good, so good. So, you know, tenacity, right, Rob? Tenacity is number one.
Eye of the tiger. If you don't have the eye of the tiger, you can forget about it.
Yeah. Tenacity is so important. And also people who keep believing in you and keep bringing you in, even when a producer will say, I've seen that guy do this part a million times. And it's like, I don't care. There's nothing wrong with Michael Keaton.
That's an amazing thing. If there's any takeaway from this, it's that there's nothing. But people were cold on him for years, right?
Yeah, the people who don't really get that epic talent in comedy is epic talent, no matter what. And so I don't care if I've seen it before; I want to see it again. I always like this business because you actors, I think people do have second chances, less so more now because they're so labeling everybody into tier one, tier two, and tier three. But via good writing, people have a second chance, and somebody who deserves an Oscar, Molly Shannon, will finally get up there and get an Oscar. There's a lot of those great people that should never be passed over, but they are.
It's so funny. The tier one, tier two, tier three, that's a new one. I didn't know that was
good. Oh, Rob. Oh, that's really. Because you get the European financiers involved in that.
Oh, yeah. So it's that version of the European financer thing, which is the grossest thing ever.
So
forever, there was this great thing where if you were like, I just gotta say it. Fuck it. Yeah. I don't care. Because this guy jumped up at the end of my Saturday Night Live and like, caused a ruckus when I hosted it. And I was like, what are you doing here? This is my show. I just did it. Brendan Fraser. So there were years where Brendan Fraser would get these movies that I wanted to, I was like, what the, he did this one great one with Ian McKellen. Do you remember that one?
He was in the car with his dad. Yeah.
It's really, really like great Oscar bait movie. And they was like, well, it's the European financing likes him still from The Mummy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he made The Mummy 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're still getting movies based on that old credit because of how much money it made in the Arab Emirates or whatever.
Momentum means nothing to them. And
Gods and Monsters was the name of the movie.
Gods and Monsters. Yeah. Yes. I remember that great one movie. Scene there in a Cadillac.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Great movie.
But nobody understands momentum or the value of word of mouth on opening weekend. You know, nobody understands that. So it's really tough every time I have to try to sell, Amy Adams. She's actually talented and she is really pretty, by the way, and Elizabeth Banks, she is really pretty, by the way.
Time out. Once again, I'm doing a series for Les Moonves. I don't know if Les is involved in this story or not, but I do. Now I'm for the first time putting the pieces together a little bit. But and I think I'd like to think I have a good eye for casting when I have the chance to. Some of the people I've cast before they were ever anybody were, Kyle Chandler and David Krumholtz and Elizabeth Mitchell and McKenna Grace and, on and on and on. So I cast Amy Adams as my love interest in a show called Dr. Vegas. It was a horrible show. So it's me, Tom Sizemore, who I gave up some of my salary to get, because he was coming off that Michael Mann TV series. He was crazy, quiet crazy, but not public crazy yet. Okay. And he should have been Gene Hackman. He was our Gene Hackman in the waiting. And Joey Pantoliano, me, Amy Adams. I mean, I
yeah.
plant my flag in that cast today.
Yeah.
We get picked up and they're like, but you got to fire Amy Adams.
Jesus.
That too, when she got fired.
She doesn't have it, man. She just doesn't. Yeah. Rob, she doesn't have it. I'm telling you.
And I had to make the call and I had to call Amy. And I was like, look, they want you. They're willing to offer you 6 episodes. I said, if I'm going to talk to you as Rob Lowe, the actor, and then I'm going to talk to you as Rob Lowe, the executive producer of this piece. Rob Lowe, the actor, says, tell them to fuck off and don't do it. Rob Lowe, the executive producer, I'm begging you to do 6 episodes. She did the 6 episodes, and then only because she didn't do the full order, she was available for Junebug.
Wow. Oh, God. Yeah.
And then the last one I'll tell you was I was doing a movie called Frank and Jesse. And it was about the James Brothers. It was back in the day when HBO made movies that were smaller. And I was friends with Liam Neeson, had just come off of Broadway doing, I want to say, Anna Karenina. And he had Schindler's List in the can. And I was trying to convince our quote unquote financiers, Liam Neeson wants to do this movie. He wants to, he, he will go from Schindler's List with Steven Spielberg to this movie. And I could not, Liam, who? Neeson, what?
Neeson. And he was Schindler.
And he was Schindler.
He was Schindler.
He's like, who is he in Schindler's List? He's Schindler.
What list is this?
He made the list, dude. He made the list.
He made the list. And we couldn't get him to bite because, you know, they hadn't heard of him yet.
Oh, how it just drives me crazy.
Insane.
Momentum
insane.
Means nothing. Yeah, it's really counterintuitive because it's intuitive. There's nobody uses their intuition, and that's what everybody on this podcast has to go by is our intuition, for God's sakes.
Yes. Momentum means nothing. Trust your intuition. Great, great lessons from Allison and Ben. You guys have ridden it all the way to the top of the casting game. That's how you do it, man. That's how you do it. Should we let these two fine folks go and let them go back to making stars?
You've got careers to make and save.
Yeah, there's a lot at stake.
Saving lives here, yeah.
I just want to say to Rob Lowe, I remember I was a casting assistant, or I was still an associate, and I first saw that movie the week that you were in. Did Vicki Rosenberg cast you?
Yes, she sure did.
Shit.
Yes.
You were sitting in a Volkswagen or something talking to whoever played your mom. And I just remember thinking, who the hell is that guy? He looks like a god. And he's talented. Really, truly. Because that must have been one of your first things. It was
the first thing I was cast in that they held for me. I didn't realize what a big deal it was. They held for me to go do The Outsiders.
Ah,
so they could
okay.
follow up The Outsiders with it. It was Thursday's right. Child with Jenna Rollins.
Wow. Well, you are amazing. Thank you.
Phenomenal.
Thank you. That's and you phenomenal. Too.
I remember that.
That's amazing. Oh, thanks, you guys. You guys were
yeah.
awesome.
Cool.
Good luck.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye, Allison. Bye, Ben.
Bye.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Should we do a town hall really quick?
Let's do a quick town hall. Thank you to Allison and Ben, but let's wrap it up with a town hall. Where do you want to do this one, Rob?
You know what? We haven't done one. It's kind of obvious. We haven't done one from the pit itself.
Wow. Inside the bottom of the pit. Dangerous times down
it's
there.
Dusty, it's dusty. It's gross. Yeah. It's hot.
It's full of trash. In this one, they're throwing a ton of trash. You might fall in. You might break your legs. You might break your neck.
That's right.
But yeah, let's do it in the pit. It's a welcoming atmosphere. Hopefully not too many people are attracted so we don't get too many questions.
Who would like to rise to the microphone and ask us a question?
The person at the mic now is Steffi from Brooklyn. And she asks, if Rob could have portrayed another character on the show, who would he have liked to be?
Ooh. Wow. Here's why this is hard. Because if you'd asked me this about any other show I've been on, it would be really easy. Really easy. I'd like to be President Bartlett on The West Wing. You know, what's amazing about this show is the characters and the voices are so tailored to those actors that you literally, as Chris Tager would say, can't imagine another actor playing those parts. They would not exist. Someone else playing Leslie Knope does not, it's not Leslie Knope anymore.
Somebody, that'd be weird.
No. Somebody else playing Ron Swanson, it's not Ron Swanson. Tom Haverford, on and on. I think it's a physical impossibility on this. That said, I wouldn't mind spending some time in animal control because I like animals.
There you go. You can join them, man. You can join Harrison Colton, the animal control guys, and that sounds fun. I mean, man, how weird would it be for you to take on those other roles? Like, you're right. Like, can you imagine anyone other than Nick playing Ron Swanson? Like, he is him, man. He is him. It's like
the other thing is, like, when I came on the show, there was a notion like, oh, well, then I'm going to be Leslie's love interest. And they're like, no, 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 that's going to be Adam Scott. And it was great. It wasn't what was expected.
Yeah, that must have been fun for you, right? Because it's like, man, I'm not going to do the expected thing. Like, this is actually kind of interesting. I get to do something different, like play this comedic role and play an energy you hadn't specifically played before, I thought. You know, I thought certainly that character was different from anything I'd seen you do.
I loved being like super, super, super nerd. Super nerd, super geek, super enthusiastic.
All right. I that's a very good answer. Animal control is the answer. I think that's what we got, man. We want to wrap this one up, Rob?
This is it. Thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't hit that subscribe button. I always like to say, tell two of your friends today.
Absolutely. But that's all we got today. So thanks to producer Greg and producer Schulte. Goodbye from Pawnee.
This episode of Parks and Recollection is produced by Greg Levine and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Alan Yang for Alan Yang Productions, Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers. The theme song is by Mouse Rat, a.k.a. Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at tmobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.